Welcome to People Power and Politics. Hard talk, riveting interviews, community updates, in-depth analysis. That's People Power and Politics. We tell it to you as it is. No holds barred. You are the people. You have the power. We bring you the politics. To listen to our show, be a guest, or to advertise, visit www.pppradio.nyc. That's www.pppradio.nyc.
A very warm welcome to everyone. We are joined by a very special guest, Dr. Mike Arlene, Professor Emeritus, Recording Industry, Middle Tennessee State University, Mosfreesboro, and co-editor of the book 2023, Analyzing Recorded Music, Collected Perspectives on Popular Music Tracks. The winner of the 2023 Society for Music Theory Publication Award for Outstanding Multi-Author Collection. He's also the author of the article, From Rebel to Retail, Inside Bob Marley's Posthumously Musical and Merchandising Empire, on which this interview is based. Welcome. Such an honor and pleasure to have you here with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, the long-awaited Bob Marley biopic, One Love,
is out this month,
and it will highlight important moments in his life, his adolescence in Churchtown, his spiritual growth, the attempt on his life.
As a music scholar, you wonder if the film is yet another extension of the Marley marketing machine. And in your article,
you explore the tension between Bob Marley's anti-capitalist messages. Can you elaborate on how you perceive this tension affecting his image and message today?
Well, we could be talking for an hour about that. First of all, I don't want to prejudge the movie having not seen it and only having seen the trailer. However, the concerns raised in the article are based on the last 40 years or so of the posthumous marketing of Marley, not just with merchandise, but also with recordings. And there have been many times when some questions have been raised about the appropriateness of the presentation of Marley's material and image during that time. So I am raising a note of concern about the possibility that the movie might continue along those trends. Maybe not. What I would suggest is, over the years, there's been a kind of a philosophical disconnection where the songs represent a particular more spiritual and less material point of view, and some of the products that have emerged from the estate seem to be focused more on the material. And so there's this lack of continuity, a kind of credibility gap between the music and its many meanings for audiences and some of the products that are allegedly representing Bob Marley's image in the modern era.
And I tend to agree with you on that, because when you listen to the music of Bob Marley, it is still so relevant today. It is so profound. And so it's almost as if, you know, what his message and what is happening now, it's not really, you know, coming together as such.
Yes, and many people will point out that the crises that Bob discusses in his lyrics that were relevant at the time are perhaps even more relevant now. And that is a positive part of what keeps the music alive. As I pointed out in my article, there are some concerns that I have about the Legend compilation album that was first released in 1984, because as I've tried to demonstrate, that album is really focused on Bob's lighter songs and the kind of political militancy and Afrocentric worldview that you find on an album like Survival is not represented to any significant extent on that Legend compilation. I should also point out, just as a wider frame of reference, that if you look at the sales success of Marley's studio albums in America, Survival is one of the only ones not to achieve gold or platinum certification. And I think that's because that record is more politically confrontational than the rest.
It's truth to power.
Exactly. Legend is the least confrontational, and that's the biggest selling reggae album of all time. So right there, you have an indication of the conflict and the contrast. The audiences who are buying Legend in order for it to sell 15 million copies in America and a lot more worldwide may be less willing to deal with the political and philosophical truths represented by Survival. So that's a part of what I'm dealing with, the fact that what's selling the most is in many ways the least representative of the totality of what Marley was doing. It isn't that Bob Marley can't sing love songs or sing about peace of love. That's part of the picture as well. But what about the other part?
Okay, so on that same note, looking at his musical legacy, how do you think that, you know, the selection process having that album Legend influences the perception of his political and spiritual messages overall?
Oh, it greatly influences it, because I think, based on my years of research, that the audiences who are going to attend the movie are by and large audiences who are geared towards Marley's peace and love message. And I think they will be less familiar with his advancement of African autonomy, Black autonomy, spiritual direction, and moving away from the colonial and imperialist shackles of the past. These are serious things. And again, you go back to Legend, you don't really get the sense that those serious topics are in the foreground. And as I mentioned in my article, I referred to the autobiography of Chris Blackwell, released in 2022. Blackwell, of course, being the founder of Island Records and the person who brought Bob Marley to the international market. And Blackwell freely stated that the Legend album was, the tracks were selected in the way that they were, so that they would appeal to the white mainstream market. And it's not unreasonable to wonder whether the movie is also targeting that same audience. And it is a commercial product, so it's possible.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the movie One Love, where you express concerns about its potential to serve as a marketing tool. And how do you think biopics like this should balance storytelling and commercial interests to honor the artist's true legacy, especially an icon like Bob Marley?
Well, I should say that I have reservations about biopics in general, because they inevitably tend to romanticize historical events, slightly distorting them in the process. And they often exaggerate personal highs and lows of the individual subjects of the films. This isn't to say that they cannot serve a useful purpose in encouraging people to explore the legacy for themselves. But in terms of dealing with that gulf between the authentic legacy and the merchandising, that poses a lot of challenges. And I can tell you now, I don't expect, for example, to hear the tracks from Survival dominating that movie for the very reasons that we've been discussing.
Might be Legend, right?
Oh, absolutely. I fully expect that. And There are many ways of looking at it, and if you are thinking in primarily commercial terms, that would be a good move. If we're thinking in terms of creative authenticity, then we have other issues to deal with. So the biopic as a vehicle for sustaining an artist's legacy has its limitations and drawbacks. And I think we need to recognize that from the beginning. But I think the issue now is the extent to which Bob Marley's story can be effectively and realistically told, because a biopic can never tell the whole story. It can never be completely thorough. But can it do enough to satisfy audiences that this is not just a fairy tale being dressed up by Hollywood?
Okay, so let's talk about ethical considerations. In the article, you touch upon the ethical consideration of post-modernly commercializing an artist's work. What guidelines do you believe the guardians of an artist's estate should follow to maintain integrity? And you mentioned what's been happening with the estates before.
Yes, and of course, we can look at a number of other estates that are not related to the reggae world, but there are many commercial and financial issues that arise. But to get back to answering your question more directly, I think that estates, and certainly the Marley estate, should look at the source of everything, which is the music. Be guided by that. Be guided by the content, not just the musical content per se, but also the lyrical and philosophical and cultural content, because that's telling you what direction in which to go. And, as I've discussed in that article, when I see Bob Marley flip-flops or Bob Marley backpacks or candles, I start to wonder what the connection is to the music, because that's what I'm looking for. Can I make a credible connection between these products and what Bob was saying and what his image seems to represent? If I can't, as a consumer, then there's going to be some kind of problem. And I think those kinds of disconnects have occurred a bit too often. I would also emphasize that these disconnects also extend to some of the recorded music. To give you some specific examples, and I talked about this in some other academic articles that preceded the current one that we're discussing many years ago. You take a track like Iron Lion Zion from 1992. Now, there is a version of that song, an acoustic version, that was recorded reportedly around 1972. But in 1992, that song was released as a single with digital drums, new brass section, new keyboards, new vocals, and it actually does not sound like anything that Bob Marley would have recorded, because so many of those tonal values didn't exist during his lifetime. So that's the sort of thing I'm talking about. Also, you have, as just one more example, the song Slogans, which is on the Africa Unite compilation from 2005, that song, there's nothing particularly wrong with the song, but I did note that it includes Eric Clapton playing guitar, who in 1974 brought Bob Marley to greater prominence indirectly by recording I Shot the Sheriff and leaping to number one on the Billboard charts and in several countries around the world. When I think of Marley and his authenticity and roots reggae, I do not think of Eric Clapton. So now, of course, he was invited by family members to participate on the recording, and there's nothing musically wrong with what's on there, but there's a symbolism involved here and a connection to Marley's history that shouldn't be ignored. And I just think that there's another disconnect there. So to answer your question, I would suggest that those who are in charge take into holistic consideration the totality of Bob's history in terms of the recordings, as well as the core content.
Okay, well said. So as a music industry scholar, when we think about cultural and political messages, Bob Marley's music is so rich with cultural and political messages. How can these messages be preserved and communicated effectively to new generations, and also while maintaining the authenticity of it?
That's very difficult. And I have to admit that for any estate, that would pose challenges in the current era, because it's very hard for generations who are digital natives to sustain attention long enough to delve into philosophical and cultural background. You know, that poses a great deal of complexity. So part of the answer, once again, comes back to dealing with the music. And to get the authenticity, you have to promote things that are at the core of the musical identity. You know, I've referred in my article to the existence of a Catch a Fire hot sauce and how problematic that is for me. I understand that there's a need to try to create branding that ties in Marley's song titles or lyrics, because the Catch a Fire phrase comes from the Slave Driver song on the Catch a Fire album from 1973. But I need someone to explain to me what the connection is between that album and Hot Sauce in 2024. I'm not seeing it. You know, it's a clever.
It's fiery.
It's fiery, yes. But the fire that he's talking about has nothing to do with consuming tasty food. That's, you know, in a nutshell, metaphorically, that's part of the problem. So it's not that you can't use Catch a Fire.
Mm-hmm.
It is how you use it. You know, for example, the estate has its own coffee operation, coffee cultivation operation in Jamaica, Blue Mountain Coffee. And, you know, we know that Bob's first single in 1962 was One Cup of Coffee. I'm not sure that when he recorded that, he was thinking about a corporate operation. But it becomes a little easier to draw that line of continuity between what he said and what they're doing later on. So that's part of the consideration. And I would like to stress that I have no problem with the estate making money. If anyone should make money from Bob's music, like and likeness and image, it should be them. It's a question of how it is being done. And there are some issues around that.
Okay, so given the current trends in music and merchandising, what future directions do you foresee for the legacies of artists like Bob Marley? How can they remain relevant and true to their original messages?
Yes, I think it's difficult in this era, and I alluded to this in the closing paragraph of the article, where there's so much political oppression and attempts to eliminate any kind of progressive thought and action. It's difficult to have music out there that points fingers at oppressors, not only in the current era, but historically. And that does pose a series of possibly insurmountable challenges. However, the vehicles like the movie might, if the content is sufficiently adequate, draw people in to the real world from which Marley came. You know, what I'm actually saying here is that people often have very romanticized visions of the Caribbean, but we know that the region has been plagued by histories of poverty and exploitation. And if the audiences who go to see the movie can interface with some of those realities, then perhaps, just possibly, a percentage may become more sensitized to what the lyrics really mean and what some of the more serious lyrical and musical statements actually are beyond things like legend. Because legend, I actually argue that legend has potentially done a lot of damage, financially, not to the estate, but in terms of representing the realities of reggae culture and the political and cultural circumstances that surrounded it. Legend isn't the doorway that leads to an experience of that reality.
All right. So thank you so much, Dr. Arlene, for sharing your insight, your knowledge. And I heard the passion in your voice talking about this issue. Thank you so much. And we look forward to having you back again.
Thank you very much.
Our pleasure.
People Power and Politics, Hard Talk, riveting interviews, community updates, in-depth analysis. That's People Power and Politics. We tell it to you as it is. No holds barred. You are the people. You have the power. We bring you the politics. To listen to our show, be a guest, or to advertise, visit www.pppradio.nyc. That's www.pppradio.nyc.